Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
Is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and tonight I'm joined once again by Laura Bradburn. It's Celtic 3, Raith Rovers 0. Celtic progress, Laura, into the semi-final of the League Cup. The draw, in actual fact, will probably take place whilst we are on here and whilst we're live. So I don't know if you're able to keep your eyes on Twitter or if somebody out there can tell us who we get. It will either be Hibs, the holder, St Johnstone, or Rangers. Looking at that performance tonight, Laura, what will Ange have learned from his team?
It's a strange one because there's not often you can come away from a 3-0 victory and say that there's not much to have learned from it, but I genuinely believe that the standard of the opposition that we were playing tonight was of such a level that, you know, we did the job. We killed the game off with the three goals. The third goal in particular from David Turnbull in the second half really put paid to any kind of intensity still being in place in the second half. Having said that, you know, we expected to beat Livingston at the weekend and we didn't, so we can only be thankful that, you know, We were expected to beat Raith Rovers, and we did at the end of the day. I thought performance wise, you know, Jota had a great game, Ralston had another good game, Montgomery was for me probably the standout of the entire 90 minutes. I had given him the man of the match, but I thought it was pretty run of the mill, but that's what you have to expect sometimes when you're playing against a team from a lower division. You've just got to get the job done on nights like that.
Yeah, and we've been saying it all week, Laura. You've just got to get the result. That's more important than anything else, is the result. And yes, you can then improve on the performances thereafter and the entertaining side of it. But there was certainly plenty of entertaining football along with that. David Boyle comes in. He is making the first point of the evening. Welcome to the show, David. Scales over Ballingolly every time. Beaton looks a different player in midfield. What happens to Johnston? Is he injured again? 3 points coming through from David. You're watching on YouTube, David. Anybody else out there who's watching on YouTube, if you want to comment, then get yourself subscribed to the YouTube channel, and you'll also be thrown in to the free prize draws. Laura, I've been chucking prizes out during the week this week. I think that's the best way to go. We'll start off with Liam Scales. He's made his debut. I think he looked very assured. He certainly didn't look out of place in any way, shape or form, which was our fear, I guess. Taking into account, though, that he is playing against second-tier opposition, of course, but he did look confident when he came on, didn't he?
Scales, is this we're talking about?
Yeah.
I thought he was. I think the thing that stood out for me with him was his sort of calmness on the ball. He seems to be able to play a pass. He seems to be able to put his foot on the ball, and I think he looked very assured. And that's not something we've been able to say, particularly of players of ours that played at the back. We talked about Starfelt in the first half, who looks the exact opposite of that on the ball. So to know we've got Scales there who we can rely on to play a pass is a really great thing. And he wasn't shy of looking for the ball either. He was asking for it and looked very kind of up for it, I thought. I didn't really know what to make of him. I hadn't seen much of him before the game tonight, but certainly on first viewing and taking into account that it's obviously Raith Rovers we've been playing against, he did look like the genuine article, and we can only wait and see what happens against tougher opposition. But, you know, the start he's made is an encouraging one.
It is. Now, I know that there will be calls for him to get a game over, you know, Starfelt, for example, and that's exactly what Scott Brotherton is coming in. Hopefully you're not shouting at us, Scott. Scales should start in front of Starfelt. Maybe a wee bit premature to say that, but this is going to lead us in to a discussion on Starfelt. I mean, we spoke in the halftime break, Laura, about the fact that he didn't look comfortable in the first 5-10 minutes. He didn't look comfortable when he has to widen his passing range. There was a moment in the second half where he's passed the ball to McCarthy, who's shouting at him to spread it wide to Jota. And McCarthy gives him it back and tells him, give it to Jota. And he passes it back for a second time to McCarthy. I mean, I do have concerns about his range of passing. And I think at his age, I don't think that is something you can coach a player. That's my only concern. I know that we've got Julian coming back. I know that, you know, Scales, as Scott said there, can play in the left-hand side of the defence. I don't think it shows up in games like tonight against Raith Rovers, but when you're playing in the Europa League, when you're playing in important league games, that's when I think there's a concern, and there still is a concern there with Starfelt.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be a particular concern if in situations like the one you described with McCarthy, he's not even listening to his teammates, or perhaps even more concerning, he is listening, but he's not able to do what they're asking him to do. So I'm not entirely sure how you can, as a professional footballer, get to the age and stage that he's at and struggle with passing as much as he seems to. And I think that it's a confidence thing as much as anything else, but I think, you know, you can be too you can be too sort of forgiving when you say it's a confidence thing, because there's an implication there that that it's going to improve when he settles more into the team. I don't think there's a lot of things that can be affected by confidence, but I don't think a lasting issue with his passing, the likes of which we're seeing just now, is something that you can just put down to confidence. I think it's a real sort of technical lack in his game, and it's something that he's going to need to improve on very, very quickly if he can at all, because the way Ange wants to play football, I think that it would actually be enough to drop him out of the team. You know, there are a lot of players who in a defensive sense are not the most technically gifted but get away with that because they offer so much defensively. I think an Ange Postecoglou team, from what I've seen, he's going to demand that technical ability from his defenders as well, and regardless of how good or not Starfelt might be in the tackle or header in the ball, which, to be honest, I've not seen anything to say he's outstanding at those either. I could see him getting dropped, especially when you see somebody like Scales come in and look so assured.
Yeah, on the ball, so confident. I think it's a fundamental to Angie's style of play, Laura, that when you get that ball, no matter who you are on the park, goalkeeper included, you need to be comfortable on the ball. I mean, Carter Vickers, to the contrary, is so comfortable on the ball. You know, he just slows the whole thing down. He doesn't seem laboured whatsoever. But there is still a concern there. And it is only at this stage a concern. I mean, I'm not writing him off. We've spent big money on him. He's a Swedish internationalist. And I would expect him to continue to develop into that style of play. But as you say, if you don't have the fundamentals in terms of the passing, and not just that, it's the tempo. A lot of the time, you look at a lot of the play, particularly going forward, it's one and two touch, and it seems as though it's very laboured. Scales, on the other hand, is getting a lot of positivity coming through in the comments section. Sam Malcolmson comes in to say that he looks promising. John McVeigh reckons that Scales looks well-balanced, and Chill Hill also likes the look of him. There's a lot of good promising comments coming through about Scales, and I think that's why I maybe suggested earlier on tonight is that type of night where you want to give him some game time. Were you disappointed that Giakoumakis didn't get an appearance?
I really don't understand that one, to be honest. I mean, we talked about it before the second half, that we were looking to see at least half an hour from him. When David Turnbull comes out and scores that goal at the start of the second half and really kills off the game, I was thinking to myself, right, this is a perfect opportunity to get Giakoumakis on. I find it even more baffling considering what we ended up doing was playing Jota through the middle, which isn't his preferred position. It's not a position that he looks like he's going to be playing with any regularity going forward. So I don't know what Ange was hoping to learn from that. Giakoumakis is only going to get up to match fitness by getting game time, and if he's not getting that game time already, I don't know when he's going to get it, because, you know, we're talking about Kyogo being out for a month or whatever. That was a couple of weeks ago that he got that injury. He's already 2 weeks down the line to being back, and if I was Giakoumakis, I would have been thinking to myself, right, this is a month for me to stake my place before he's back. It looks as if by the time Giakoumakis gets his chance, Kyogo will nearly be back to being able to be selected. So, yeah, I don't really understand why we didn't see him tonight. I don't really understand what the thinking is behind that. And it frustrates me even more from the point of view, if Ange comes out in the post-match and says, well, he's still not ready, well, then he shouldn't have been on the bench. I think if he's on the bench, he should be available for selection. And that being the case, I would have really loved to have seen him tonight. Not just from the Jota point of view, but also from the fact that Ayeti provided so little. You know, you could have just made a straight swap for Ayeti and it would have been a totally understandable position, and it would have been able to give Georgios Giakoumakis a chance to make his debut in about as unpressured a situation you'll have in a Celtic shirt. And I think that's where I just fail to understand the decision, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, to be completely fair. 3-0 just after the break, and I've got to say, bit of credit to Ayeti for winning the ball and releasing David Turnbull, but it wasn't his best game. He's gone down in the box. There was a penalty shout, a couple of nibbles. Do you think it was a penalty or not?
Not for me, and I only say that because I thought the defender looked as if he wasn't really trying to foul him. He was trying to get in between Ayeti and the ball, and he got his own feet tangled. But if I'd have been Ayeti, having had the chance to see it back, obviously, I'd have seen a situation there where the defender's got his legs tangled, he's fallen over, he's in no position to be able to try and keep blocking you or get the ball away in any sense. All he had to do was perhaps run round him, the ball was still rolling out in his direction and he had a chance through on goal. So for him to then throw himself down off the back of that to try and claim the penalty, I don't really understand. But I mean, I guess you've got to do what you think's right in the moment. But for me, it wasn't a penalty. And I think if I'm a Yeti, I'm trying to handle that in a slightly different manner.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned Jota, and I think he was far more effective down the left-hand side. There's a point coming in from Brian Walsh. We'll remember a fantastic passage of play whereby Jota's move to set up Rogic with the wrong along the byline is exactly what we needed to see last Sunday, something where a player's basically taking the game by the scruff of the neck, taking out a couple of their defenders with tremendous footwork and creating a chance out of nothing. Laura, and that's how to beat a packed defence. We do have the creativity. We've got Abada who can beat a man Jota. You know, Kyogo can do it. It's frustrating with that in mind that we can't often break down these packed defences.
Yeah, it's a strange one because I think the manner in which we play sometimes would suggest that it should be very easy for us to break down these defences. But what we seem to be doing sometimes is trying to pass the ball about the box and look for the little runs inside the channels. And these defences are playing so deep against us that you can't pass beyond them a lot of the time. You do have to go around them on the wide flanks. And it is frustrating when you're playing against teams like that. But at the end of the day, you're playing for Celtic against teams who are going to bank themselves in, and you need to be able to find a way around that. I think going centrally tonight, we were struggling because there were so many bodies in the defence, but I think if we're going to go wide, as I said in the first half, we need better delivery in that case, because you know we were getting a lot of joy in terms of getting the ball out to Ralston in the first half, but his crossing wasn't great. Juranovic, to be fair, came on and his crossing wasn't much better either. So I think we're going to have a situation where go through the middle when we can do, but if we're going to have to go out wide to get past these packed defences, we have to improve our delivery, because these balls getting hit over the top of strikers and over the top of defenders running into the box is obviously going to provide nothing for us. And it's frustrating to watch because you see a good chance go awry just because one player's overhit pass, and it can, you know, really suck the joy out of the attacking football that we've been playing so far.
Now, Sean F comes in, Laura, to say, doesn't instill me with much confidence. It seems we are lacking creativity and energy. We're looking quite lacklustre. I don't think tonight's performance required Celtic to get out of second or third gear, to be honest with you. And after the sending off, it's almost as if it descended into almost like a bounce game, almost like a training match. And that's understandable. But I think Sean's point is a relevant one, because there's going to be other nights where we're playing a team not necessarily a league below us, but maybe in the lower reaches of the division, Laura, and it's going to be tough to break them down. It's going to be nothing each. And that's when you start worrying about the lack of tempo and the lack of creativity. Is this just down to all of the factors we've mentioned previously, Angie's new style, a whole clutch of new players trying to blend, or do you think it's a wee bit more worrying than that?
Listen, I was worried on Sunday because we looked for the entire 90 minutes the way that we looked tonight. I think we've got to take encouragement from tonight that we went out, got the job done, killed the game off. I don't particularly see any problem with reducing the intensity once the game is won, and I think that was all it was tonight. I think we've got to be sensible. We've got a long season ahead of us, hopefully with a lot of matches, and I don't think there's a necessity to go gung-ho for five or six every single game just because we've got the opportunity to. I understand the commenter's point that, you know, it wasn't a fantastic second half after the third goal went in, and you could argue that based on previous performances, it's a sign that we are a bit lackluster. But I think on taking tonight in isolation, I think it was basically a case of job done and no need to push ourselves beyond that second or third gear. And to be honest, if we were doing that every week, if we were getting 3-0 up and then spending the last 20 minutes just seeing the game out, I would be more than happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was also great to hear the crowd singing the old Henrik Larsson songs as well, Laura, turning 50 this year. And of course, our very own Kevin Graham has written a book, a tribute to Henrik Larsson, with a difference because it's 50 poems on the King of Kings. So look out for that. That will be coming out. A lot of people have been getting in touch. It's going to be available via axom.net. We will announce it on the podcast and the social media very, very soon. Here's an interesting one coming in from Paul Campbell. Now, I've had to be thinking about this before bringing it up. Like to look at Monty again. Have we finally found a successor to KT? And I think initially, whenever you see the name of Kieran Tierney coming in, he's not comparing him to Kieran Tierney. Paul, what Paul's saying, I think, and because I would agree with this side of it, we've never really...
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Replaced Kieran Tierney in terms of a left-back that you're 100% happy with, one that's going to be there for years to come. And, you know, who have we brought in since Tierney broke into the side? We brought back Emilio Izaguirre, didn't we? We've brought in Greg Taylor. There's been a few others. Ball and Golly, of course, came in, didn't work out there. It's a bit early to say, but a couple of weeks back, Laura, what I did say about Montgomery is he had never let us down. I think he's played something like 12 or 13 games for the first team, a few starts, and he definitely looked promising tonight, and particularly so when they switched him further up the park.
Yeah, well, that was one thing I was going to say was I get the point that Paul is making in terms of the next KT could be in relation to a lot of things. It could be because he's a left-sided player. It could just be sort of the next kind of talismanic young player for Celtic coming forward. And Montgomery, I think he offers a little bit more in terms of his flexibility and what he can offer to the team in general. Tierney was very much and remains very much a left-back or a left-wing-back who can occasionally support the attack but is, in the main, a defender. Whereas I think Montgomery can do that job but also seems to be available. You know, we saw when Scales came on that he moved further up the park. So I think there's a bit more flexibility to his game. But I think, like you say, there's we can't complain if he comes in and doesn't put a foot wrong, and I don't think he has done so far. Not every single one of his performances have been sparkling, but I can't think of a single instance where he's been to blame for any certain goal or he's had a particularly poor performance. I think he's been pretty consistent with a few really excellent performances put in there. And I think for a guy of his age and stage, I think that's probably the best you can ask for. And I certainly, as I said, sort of at halftime and before the game, when your other options are Ball and Golly or Greg Taylor at left-back, for me, I don't see any reason why Montgomery isn't first choice going forward.
Well, I said, you know, was it too bold to suggest that Ralston and Monty are the two first choices in terms of the full-backs? What I was also impressed with, though, Laura, is the way that Ralston was able to link up with Juranovic, and then on the left-hand side, Scales, when he came on, was linking up pretty well with Montgomery as well. So it does give us the options whereby Juranovic, who is a natural right-back, can play further up the park. Monty can get pushed up. We were talking before the game about options. Liam Scales isn't just an option at centre-half, but at left-back as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's very easy when you look at him come onto the pitch with Liam Scales to see his stature and see how tall he is and how broad-shouldered he is to think that he's a perfect centre-half, and I think he probably is. I think he said himself, actually, that he does prefer to play in that position. But you've got to admit, when you see how well he plays the ball and how willing he is to get forward and that kind of thing, and looks as if he might even have a little bit of pace on him, he's going to be a good left-back as well. He certainly showed a few times at Shamrock Rovers that he could play there. So you know, given the shortage we have in terms of numbers in the squad, you need players who are equally adept at playing a few different positions. So if Scales is available to play either at left-back or centre-back, then you've got to applaud that and say that that's something that we can use going forward, especially when, as we've said before, options are limited in those areas. I personally would prefer to see him perhaps play at centre-back. I think him and Carter Vickers look like a really calm, sort of imposing pairing, much more so than Starfelt. I understand that that probably won't be the option that happens going forward. I would imagine if the board have anything to say about it, we can't have a £4.5 million signing sitting on the bench. But, you know, if it was to be my preferred option, I would like to see Scales and Carter Vickers at centre-half. But yeah, it looks equally adept at centre-half and left-back, which is great to see.
Yes, it's brilliant to see. There's a couple of really interesting points coming in. Thanks, everybody, for getting involved. I know that often the post-match, Laura, is at its height and busiest when people are venting their frustration and anger after a poor result. And tonight, even after beating Championship side Raith Rovers, were live to over 1,000 viewers. So thank you for joining us on all the various social media channels. And we've got... I've got to bring these up. That's how bad my eyesight is, Laura. I've got to bring them up onto the big screen before I can read them. Do not gift sub me on Twitch. I think this is maybe aimed at you, Laura. The new mixtape has numerous misplaced passes, but that does not get the same attention as if Sorrow or Starfelt do it. Now, I'll start off this one, Laura, because I think, firstly, what we would need to say is that if you look at the amount of passes that Turnbull makes, then I'm pretty sure his percentage of misplaced passes would still be pretty low. If Starfelt makes a misplaced pass at the back, it's going to be heightened by the fact that he's perhaps putting us under pressure. And look, come on, about Sorrow, he loses possession a hell of a lot. I've said in the past, and it was good to see Turnbull completing the match on his 50th appearance for Celtic, scoring his 15th goal, which is a decent return from midfield. You know, if you think about the fact that Callum McGregor regularly plays 50 games in a season, if a midfielder was to give you 15 goals in 50 games in a season, you'd be raving about that, because I think most midfielders are going for double figures. I don't know if it's a problem. His ball retention seems to be very good until he maybe tires in the last third of the game. What's your thoughts on that, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, to take up the point, do not gift sub me, will not be getting a gift sub from me, that's for sure. But listen, I think Sorrow, for a start, I don't think most of the criticism of Sorrow has actually been about his passing. It's not been great, but I think most people's criticism of Sorrow is the kind of bull in a china shop way that he goes about doing his tackling and getting booked and that kind of thing, and you know, sort of running about like a headless chicken, running into tackles in a kind of reckless way. So Sorrow, I don't think, is being criticised for passing as much as Starfelt. Starfelt, like you say, the reason his passing gets more attention is because, just naturally, being a defender, a bad pass from him puts us under more pressure than if Turnbull did it. But, you know, I said it before the game, I said it at half-time, I love David Turnbull. I think he's one of the best players that we have on his best day, but I'm not beyond criticising him. And when he has poor games, I think he deserves to be called out for it. Having said that, I would take a David Turnbull who puts a few misplaced passes around the park if he's going to pop up with goals like the one that he did tonight. You know, at the end of the day, he's contributed more positively than he has negatively. And I think he deserves praise for when he does that. I think the disadvantage we have sometimes on the podcast is, you know, we can say things slightly in jest, and we can say things when we're slightly inebriated, as I might have been when I said about McStay and Turnbull. certain things that, you know, if you said it in a pub amongst your friends, you wouldn't be held to that standard 6 months later. But here we are, live in front of over 1,000 people, and quite rightly, you're going to be held up for everything you do or don't say, no matter how stupid it comes out. Listen, Paul McStay is an all-time Celtic great. David Turnbull is nowhere near that and never will be. But, you know, he shows some traits that are similar to McStay, and I think that's the point I was trying to make. He's got that classy midfield touch that I think on his best day can be really sort of lethal for Celtic, and I love to see it when it does appear.
I love the pirouette. I think that's what puts me in mind sometimes of the maestro. When we're looking at the team then, and yeah, we have been critical after the Livingston game. Well, you're going to be, aren't you? You've just been beaten from the bottom of the table side, who had 1 point on the board, putting your kind of league campaign at this early stage in doubt already. Yeah, no one wins the league, but we've heard all the cliches. No one wins the league in September. But you can certainly hinder your chances if you're going to only win half your games. But when you're looking at that, and I know it doesn't always work like this, Laura, but Jota looked very, very good tonight. We've seen Abada looking in very good since he's came to the club. Kyogo has been electrifying at times. There's moments when Rogic looks unplayable with his magnetic foot. Turnbull on his game is one of the most gifted technical players in Scottish football. Behind them, you've then got Callum McGregor, who can orchestrate the play. We've got Joe Hart. We finally found someone who can fill the gap at the back. Carter Vickers looks good. Liam Scales looks good. We've got Montgomery. We've got Ralston. Once we get everybody back, how far away do you think we are? How big is the job in January in terms of bringing new players in?
I actually don't know that we're struggling as much for numbers as we might have thought we were, especially once we get injuries off the table. I think, you know, we've never at any point this season been able to play our full strength best 11, and I get that that's part of football and you have to put up with that from time to time, but I do think we've got enough players. You listed them in the WhatsApp group a few days ago. We've got enough players that have still to come back that I think we have a lot to be optimistic about. As I've said numerous times before, I totally believe in what Ange is doing. I'm totally willing to back him, and I think he can provide the kind of football that Celtic fans crave and be the entertaining manager and the entertaining football sort of guru, if you like, that we want going forward. Brian on the podcast said a number of weeks ago that he thought we would come up against a few bloody noses throughout the season, and I think that's proven to be the case. I think we play a risky brand of football, and that isn't always going to pay off for us, but I'm seeing more positives than I am negatives at the moment on the pitch, and I think with the players that have still to come back, once they're back, I think we'll be in a relatively strong position. I would still like to see perhaps another striker in, just because we'd really only have three out-and-out strikers, one of which kind of isn't always on his game, and one who we've yet to see anything from, so we don't really know how to judge it. But I think, you know, in any good squad, you need at least three or four good strikers that you can choose from. So that's the only position I really feel we need to strengthen, that and left back, really. Apart from that, I think everywhere else we've got some really good options, and I definitely feel more positive about it from the point of view of the squad than I did, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, I think when we were looking at the figures, you know, after the game in Betis, it was a case of the fact, I think we're about three first-team players down compared to the squad size last season. So if one of them is a striker, one of them is a left-back, I would also expect in January for a couple of players to be offloaded. You know, I would be looking potentially, if Ewan Henderson's not going to get game time, Laura, then get him out on loan. Get the boy a move, get him playing football. At that stage of his career, he needs to be playing or he'll stagnate. At left back, I think we'll probably still be looking to offload Ball and Golly. I know he made a surprise appearance against Livingston. Barkas has no future at Celtic, so it looks as though we'll be offloading him. And then it begs the question, you know, if we only bring in another two, then a few injuries and we could be threadbare. I don't see us having such an injury crisis, but COVID is still in the air, isn't it? And you just never know when you're going to have an outbreak and continue to have half a dozen players out, and that causes you problems. You were talking about strikers there, and I totally agree with you. I think that we are short up top. Hugh Tennant, 1863, comes in, and he is saying Klamala and Bio signed for similar money. Yeah, absolutely. I think Klamala was 3 million plus. Bio was about 2.5. Same as the new Sammy. How's he not fit? I'm not quite there yet. I think we've been faced with a scenario with Giakoumakis where you've been offered a player who, by all accounts, according to Anthony Joseph, who is a very well-respected Sky Sports broadcaster and journalist, and I like him a lot, and you know he doesn't sensationalise anything, but by all accounts, had his side not been relegated, they were looking for €10 million for this player. They were relegated and they've offloaded him. I know that some people have said that a lot of his goals were from the penalty spot. If he knows his way to go, and he's never going to be the first choice when you look at the start Kyogo's made, then I really don't have any concerns at this moment in time, the fact that he wasn't used tonight. It could well just be, you know, that Ange Postecoglou wanted to get minutes into the legs of other players. He wants... you know, at this stage to have a look at Beaton in a midfield position or Liam Scales at left back. I'm not too concerned that we didn't see Giakoumakis, other than the selfish aspect of the fact that I wanted to see him.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It was just kind of, as I said at the start of the post-match coverage, it was more of a selfish thing of I'm keen to see him, I'm eager to see what he can offer, but, you know, if we have to wait a little bit longer, I'm more than willing to do that. I still don't understand, from Ange's point of view, why this wasn't an ideal opportunity to do it. But I don't think that we can write him off as a flop before we've even seen him. You know, I think he's been bought for a reason, and I think he can offer us something if the gold record in the Eredivisie is anything to go by. Because the other thing you have to remember is, it's easy to score that number of goals in a team that's challenging for Europe or a team that's challenging for the top of the league. If you can do that in a team that ends up getting relegated, then your conversion rate to chances must be high, because you're not going to be getting a lot of chances either. So, I think there's plenty to be excited about from him. If we have to wait a little bit longer, then so be it. But the fact that he was even on the bench tonight is encouraging, because it means that he's not far away. When, you know, we were talking at the start of the week that he might be as many as 3 weeks away from full fitness. So, you know, we're already a step ahead just having him on the bench from where we were. But before I come back to you, I've just seen the League Cup draw. So we've got Rangers are playing Hibs and Celtic are playing St Johnston. So those ties are both being played at Hampden Park, and they're being played on the weekend of November 20th and 21st, with the final to be played by the winner of those on the 19th of December.
There you go. I mean, I think I was looking at the three potential fixtures that we could have had there, and the way Celtic have been playing, none of them are particularly easy. We're coming up against a side who, unbelievable performance last season. Anyone with two eyes in their head knew that their gaffer was the manager of the year. Doing what he did with that budget, and for such an unfashionable side as St Johnstone, who don't get massive crowds, and that kind of holds them back to the point where they can't really progress a great deal, Laura, because, you know, Perth, you know, this is the thing I always wonder about St Johnstone, because I see them in terms of a similar size, coming from a similar size of city with a similar population as Dunfermline. And you think, well, look at Dunfermline compared to St Johnstone. And it's a period of quite a few years of sustainability and, you know, just doing enough to make sure they're a kind of mid-table side. They've done so well under Tommy Wright. And I think that since Davidson's come in, they've been such a difficult side to beat. And they've done so well last season, I think this season as well. Even, you know, watching them in Europe, I wanted them to progress. I thought they'd done so well against Galatasaray. And, yeah, it's not going to be an easy game. They know how to win a cup tie, that's for sure. So it's a tough one, and we look forward to it. We will also cover it, of course, on A Celtic State of Mind. We'll be covering the game on Sunday against Dundee United, and then the following Thursday, our next Europa League tie at home against Leverkusen. So loads to look forward to. And when we're looking at the fact that we've been regularly over 1,000 live tonight on the post-match, Laura. It's been a busy old night, and I've been pretty happy with the performance and the outcome. And I've got to thank everybody for getting involved, because we never take it for granted when people tune into A Celtic State of Mind. It's quite incredible at times when you consider how many people watch the show. So thank you very much for doing that. We want you to subscribe. We want you to follow us on the social media, but subscribe on YouTube. What we're doing is we're selling some merchandise on the website, axum.net, to finance what we're doing. We've got a studio here, and obviously we are going out every single day. The minute you buy something or register on the site, you are part of the Axum cult, I'm afraid, because then I've got your email address and I will be inviting you to all sorts of Axum bulletins, behind-the-scenes bulletins, etc., that you can get involved in as well. So get involved, subscribe to us, let us know what you think. I've been receiving some really nice emails at pauljohndykes@gmail.com, so feel free to send us your thoughts on that as well. I will get back to you. Sometimes takes me a wee while when there's a deluge, but I definitely will get back to you.
Just to jump in there, Paul, as well, for anybody who doesn't understand how YouTube works, the word subscription suggests, you know, a charge of some description, but subscription is just the word that they use on YouTube for, you know, following the channel. So if you press that red subscription button, you're not getting charged any money. You're merely signing up so as that you get that little notification on your phone, or you get an email to say that we've gone live or another video has gone up in the channel. So it's not anything financially binding for you. It's just something to let you know when we go live. And obviously subscribing helps us get up to that, to those milestones in terms of people subscribing to the channel that we like to get to. So just wanted to clear that up, because I know that some people think subscription equals money, and it definitely does not in this case.
No, absolutely. Never asked for any finances other than a charity weekender back in December that you were involved in, Laura. There will be more charity endeavours leading up to the end of this year. So yeah, free subscription and you'll be in line for loads of prizes, music and Celtic related. We'll also get in touch with you with various other offers that you might be interested in. So yes, we are through to the semi-finals of the first trophy of the season. We'll be facing St Johnstone. It'll be a tough one, but we look forward to that. All that's left for me to say is thank you to every single one of you for getting involved on the comment section tonight, and thank you to Laura Bradburn, I got your name right this time, for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat? Just stop. This isn't 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today, because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203. Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's BASY to 203203.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.